News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
Now, the face of Patrick Quirk is on the front page of every newspaper in the state today. The Tipperary farmer yesterday sentenced to life in prison after being found guilty of the murder of part-time DJ Bobby Ryan. That conviction secured. Of course, there was no murder scene, no murder weapon, and little or no forensic evidence. Here to discuss some of those issues is Mark Murphy, criminal barrister. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
How rare is that you'd get a conviction with no forensic evidence? It was all circumstantial, was it?
It was all circumstantial in this case. But to answer your question as to how rare it is, not as rare as you might think. Now, as society moves along and there's more and more science and technology, it is more common to have forensic evidence. So, for example, fingerprints started coming around in the late 19th, early 20th century, and it's moved on to more advanced things. But you still have convictions in serious cases where there's no forensic evidence. The obvious example would be in a serious case would be, for example, in a rape case. So sometimes, for example, you may have evidence of, you know, injuries to the alleged victim, or you may have torn underwear or something like that. But often a report is not made or a complaint is not made to the Gardaí at the time. It might be several weeks later, several months later. And the case is effectively run on the basis of the alleged victim says one thing happened and the defendant says it didn't happen. And the jury is then asked to decide the case on that basis.
It is, I'm sure, from the prosecution's point of view, a more uphill battle, though, without that forensic evidence. We probably saw that with the jury deliberations, how long they went on, and the fact then that they got a direction that a majority verdict was now acceptable as opposed to a unanimous.
If I were prosecuting the case, I would certainly feel more comfortable securing a conviction if there was significant amounts of forensic evidence. Now, forensic evidence is not infallible, and it's all to do with interpretation of that forensic evidence. In terms of the jury deliberation, obviously, I'm not party to that, but they certainly spent a considerable amount of time thinking about this. And in my experience of juries and doing jury trials myself, you know, juries take their job seriously. They consider the evidence, they take their time, and they come to what they believe is the right result.
Why ask? Because there would have been a lot of armchair jurists following this trial.
Yes.
And they might wonder, if a majority verdict will do, why ask for a unanimous one in the first place?
Well, that's a very good point. What the law says is that, as you know, there are 12 people on the jury. And what the law says is that the judge must ask a jury for a unanimous verdict. That's 12-0, if I can put it in sporting terms. And that's either 12-0 to convict or 12-0 to find not guilty. Mm. Now, what happens is, at the close of a trial, the prosecution will make a closing speech, the defence will make a closing speech, and the judge will sum up the evidence and direct a jury on the law that is applicable to the particular case being tried. The jury then go off and deliberate, and it's done in secret and in private, and what they're talking about, nobody really knows.
Yeah.
But it's often the case that after a couple of hours, the jury come back and they still don't have a verdict. So what the judge will do, in consultation with both the prosecution and the defence, the judge will say, I am now willing to accept what's called a majority verdict. And a majority verdict is a verdict upon which at least 10 jurors are agreed.
When you say in consultation, as in he'll let them know, or he asks, like as in the defence has to acquiesce to this request?
I don't want to overplay the role of the barristers. The judge, in any given trial, the judge is the boss, the judge is the referee, and his or her rulings are taken as law.
So the judge says, look lads, this is what I'm going to do. We're all going to agree on
The judge might say, look, you know, the jury have been out for 2 hours. If they're still out, you know, in 2.5 hours, you know, after 2.5 hours, I'm going to direct them. Do you have any objection? But it's rare enough that there would be an objection to that.
Another question I know a lot of people in here in News Talk were wondering yesterday was, as soon as that verdict came in, a lot of other information from the trial started to seep out. A lot of the arguments that were had when the jury were sent out of the room about evidence and what was admissible and what wasn't in terms of internet searches and the like. What is the rule there? Because someone else has texted in to say, why shouldn't prejudicial evidence gathered during an investigation be revealed? Isn't the whole process of the trial to prove innocence or guilt?
Well, that's a very good question. And that's something that, you know, if I'm in the pub having a pint with my friends, that's the thing that I'm always asked. Firstly, it's not unusual for evidence to be excluded from a trial. this trial or any other trial, and there's very many reasons for that. But the general test that's applied by the judge in criminal trials is whether evidence that is proposed to be led by the prosecution is more probative or more prejudicial. So if, for example, there is evidence that doesn't really advance the prosecution case, but paints the accused in a very bad light. So if, for example, they have a, you know, they like ringing up dodgy phone lines for to get kicks, but it's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
The judge will not allow that type of evidence to go in because that's more prejudicial.
It's a little bit prejudicial. A bit of mudslinging.
Mudslinging generally is not allowed.
Yeah.
But it's not unusual for evidence not to be heard by the jury, and the judge would be would decide whether that evidence should or shouldn't. But also the second thing that should be borne in mind when you're dealing with whether evidence goes before a jury is your constitutional rights, your constitutional protections. And these are protections that apply to you, me, to anybody who may be on trial. So if, for example, the guards arrive at your door at 7 o'clock in the morning, hammer down the door, you know, handcuff you, search the house and find something, drugs, let's say, that shouldn't be there, and they do so without a warrant, in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases, that evidence will be excluded because the guards have breached your constitutional rights and they've acted in an unlawful manner, and the judge will not allow that type of evidence.
All right. Well, look, fascinating stuff. Mark Murphy, criminal barrister. Thanks a million for coming into us this morning.
Thank you for having me.